It seems that there's a bit of friction between Joe Root and the senior bowlers in particular.
This fantastic but troubled player who causes us difficulties time and again.
If you've got the best record one-on-one when it comes to Roger Federer, he's got the best head-to-head record against Rafa Nadal, and if he surpasses those players with Grand Slam titles, then he has to be the GOAT.
I wouldn't say that I'm religious at all, Matt, far from it, but I just like the fact there's not a lot on. I can see the point of view and the argument for it, but I would prefer not to race on the Friday.
On RSN Central, welcome to the Thursday Forum.
Let's welcome in the team. It's a very good morning to you, Mark Waugh.
G'day, Gareth. Whitey, yeah, good to talk to you.
Do you want me to send you Willie Pike's number, Junior?
There might be a bit of a queue up trying to get it, but he should be riding plenty of winners in Sydney, even though that's obviously a bit tougher than a bit more depth than Perth. I mean, if you're a good rider, you're a good rider anywhere. So, yeah, it's interesting to see how he shapes up.
So do you think that New South Wales will embrace William?
Oh, I reckon if he starts riding winners, they will. Yes. If he doesn't, they won't. It's a pretty fickle game, so it's all about performance, isn't it? So if he can sit on and ride some winners, I'm sure he'd be pretty popular with the trainers and the owners.
There's great debate regarding the jockey ranks in Sydney. I think they're the strongest in the country, or Melbourne want to be far away. I'm probably a little bit biased because I'm a Victorian, but you've got McDonald, you've got Barry, you've got Nash Frewiller, Timmy Clark, Abdullah, I'm probably missing out on a few, Jason Collett. So William's advantage, I would imagine, that he can ride light as well. So you would imagine that he would be getting a few opportunities.
Oh, he will. He'll he's ridden for Chris Waller before, hasn't he? I mean, Hawks
Wayne
use
Hawks,
him a lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's plenty of horses around, so I'm sure, especially in these times, COVID times, where every second jockey's, having a week off. So, no, he'll get rides for sure.
Adam White, hello to you.
G'day, Gareth.
Now, what about last night? Glenn Maxwell, have you ever seen anything like that before?
Well, no, I haven't, because it hasn't been done before.
No.
It was the highest score in Big Bash history. I think it was one of those things, Mark, and I'm interested in your views on this, that complete freedom of mind. The Stars couldn't make the finals. They could go out there. They had to bat first. It was just like, you know what? We can just have some fun. It's amazing what happens when there's not that pressure on the result as such. Freedom of mind, and away they went.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, obviously the pressure was off. Plus, I mean, let's be fair, Nick, I mean, it was basically a club bowling attack.
Yes.
It was a weak, very, very weak bowling attack. So it's just a pity that they're not in the finals, the Stars, because I feel if they got in the finals, they could probably win it with that side they got. They've sort of that was the most disappointing thing. Obviously, we've seen Glenn Maxwell do that sort of innings many times, but not to that extent. You know, he often get 40 off 20 or 60. I mean, he's made hundreds before, but 154 off 64 balls, it's great going against any quality of attack. But unfortunately for the Stars, probably not quite at the right time of the series.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of a victim of circumstances a little bit with the coronavirus going through the team when it did, and they had to play, quite a handful of matches, either without their best players or with their players infected.
And then the Renegades lose the unlosable game
but
night before.
I still think the Stars' bowling attack's not as good as some of the other attacks, and I think that's been probably their biggest issue. Their batting is so strong, but too often, defending, they weren't so good. But that Joe Clark's been a revelation, hasn't he? If you've seen someone hit the ball as pure as him, he might not hit as hard or as far, but his timing.
Mm. No, he reminds me of Butler, Josh Butler from England. Same sort of ball striking, just there's no spin on the ball when they hit it. They hit it very flat and clean, but you've just got to listen to the noise it makes when he hits it, and it's that real crisp sort of noise. So, yeah, he's a talent. He probably shouldn't be far off playing for England either. They've got an amazing number of sort of wicket-keeper batsman type, one-day players. They probably need a few more in Test match cricket, which we'll talk about, but they've got some talent in the white ball arena, the Poms, that is for sure.
Is there much of a difference between Test cricket to, say, T20 in a domestic competition? Because we've seen, like, Billings, for example, look like Dom Bradman playing in the Big Bash.
Like comparing a 900-metre horse to running a Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
Yes. The answer to your question is yes, there is a big difference.
They trial, okay.
But, But I guess talent is talent. You know, if you've got good hand-eye coordination, then there's no reason why, you know, players shouldn't be able to adapt to the different variations, which, you know, a lot of the really top players are pretty good at all three formats. So, you know, there's a slight bit of sense to your reasoning there, Gareth, but it is a big difference at the end of the day.
Well, it didn't take them long, Whitey. About 5 minutes after Maxwell's innings, they're saying, well, he's got to be booked on that tour to Pakistan and all of the test series that Australia will be competing in on the continent, I should say, later this year.
I think we had this conversation before Christmas, Mark, where we were talking about what conditions to expect in Pakistan. And everyone just thinks it's going to be these spin-friendly wickets like you see in India, but it's not. I mean, you've played in Pakistan. I don't think necessarily you need to be worrying about taking four spinners. It's more about having an attack to be able to find a way to get 20 wickets on what are essentially, batting feather beds.
Well, they were. I mean, I've been to Pakistan a number of times, and the wickets are traditionally quite firm and not a lot of grass, so you see a lot of reverse swing. I mean, really, Pakistan haven't had great spinners for the last few years. Their pace attack is their strength, Pakistan. So it's more the reverse swing and pace through the air for the faster bowler. So a bit different to India, where you get very sort of crumbling surfaces and not as firm as Pakistan. So, no, you're definitely right, Whitey. It's not all about spin in Pakistan. Quite often, it's the opposite. It's about, you know, pace through the air and reverse swing. So, you know, that's where Maxwell, you know, he's probably... He'd be better suited against the spinning conditions in India. So, yeah, look, I'd be surprised if he's in the frame for the Pakistan tour, but maybe India or Sri Lanka down the track, I guess.
We had Scotty Boland on the Breakfast Club here on RSN 927 this morning, so it's got me thinking then, who do we pick in that first test with our bowling lineup?
Well, I think it's more you're looking at the likes of Richardson and Nisa, more guys that move the ball in the air rather than someone like Boland who hits the deck hard. He's more conditions conducive to here in Australia and probably England and South Africa. Those are the sorts of places that he might be more successful. But, I mean, over the test summer, Mark, what we saw in Australia was wickets that were actually good for bowling. I mean, in the past, historically, it's been get 600 and good luck.
Yeah, well, I mean, every test match, it really was bowler-friendly conditions in Australia, which I think was great. I thought the tests were good to watch. I mean, it really should have drawn England closer to us with their seam bowling. But I slightly disagree with Boland. I think Boland would be effective in Pakistan because he bowls stump to stump. You've got a lot of LBWs over there. I don't think Nisa would be probably suited in Pakistan. Jai Richardson, yes, but I think Boland, you know, if you need to bowl straight and hit guys on the pads in front of the stumps, which you often do need to do that in Pakistan, Boland could be effective. But, it was a bowler summer, wasn't it? You know, the batting in the test matches was tough work for both sides, especially England. They were poor in every test match, really. There was a couple of, you know, good partnerships throughout each test, but generally speaking, you know, the bowlers dominated the Ashes, didn't they?
Is Boland in front of Hazelwood now, Junior?
No. Hazelwood, if Hazelwood's fit, he's quality, Josh Hazelwood. That's the other thing. I mean, Australia, we had a new captain, obviously, a new wicketkeeper, and Hazelwood only played limited overs in that test series. So we weren't actually probably at our strongest, although Hazelwood couldn't have done any better than Boland. That's true. But I think he's ahead of Boland. Look, as good as Boland did 18 wickets in three tests, I mean, Josh Hazelwood's, he's top class. So Boland's got to prove himself yet over a long period of time, but he certainly couldn't start his career any better than what he did.
I think we can often forget about players when they're not playing, and I know he only missed four matches, Hazelwood, but he's got 215 test wickets at 25.
Yeah, I understand that, but Scotty Boland's averaging 9 these days, and he looks unplayable.
In three games that suited the bowlers.
Correct.
And I'm a massive Scott Boland fan, but I think we've got to put into perspective that Hazelwood's done it over a long period of time in very different conditions. I think he's almost first pick for me. Cummins, and then maybe Hazelwood.
Yeah.
Second pick, probably.
Yeah, what about who opens the batting for Australia then?
No, I don't know, and I'm interested. I feel like I've been talking to you, and I haven't been every day on the couch, Mark, because I watch you on the television every day, and it's been spoken
about
a lot.
Been working 15 hours a day for the last 3 weeks.
Right. A couple of days off, which is good.
But just that whole thing about that, say, what Australia has learnt from its test team, because they've got themselves into a bit of a pickle because Khawaja did so well when Head was out, obviously, but then when Head came back, he proved that he is a legitimate number five. But where does Khawaja fit? And is he someone that they'll have to continue to open when it might not necessarily be his best position? Do they go back to Harris? What do they do?
Yeah, it's a bit tricky, isn't it? I mean, yeah. Travis said, you've got to lock him in at number five. I mean, as obviously Uzi did great in Sydney, you couldn't do any better. Two test match hundreds, but Travis Head's 200s in the test series are a level above anything else. I mean, that 100 in Hobart was amazing in those conditions to come out and back yourself. So he's a lock in at number five. So then you've got to go back to Khawaja Harris having a bit of a shootout, don't you? And I guess it's all depend on the conditions, who you're playing against, all those sorts of things. I mean, traditionally, Australian teams and selectors don't like chopping and changing the batting order, but I don't know, it's just exceptional circumstances at the moment. You'd probably have to go with Khawaja up front in Pakistan, I'd say. That's my personal opinion. Yeah, I think Harris, whilst he's certainly... He's looked pretty good this summer, Marcus Harris, but once again, he hasn't quite nailed that score, so he's left the door open. But I think it's just great. We've got so much depth there, but I would imagine that Khawaja would have first crack at probably the opening in Pakistan, but, you know, I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's one of those first times where the selectors were challenged with a really difficult position, because Harris is obviously, it's a specialised position to open the batting, and Harris is that, whereas Khawaja, who has opened the batting before, but he's sort of late... career renaissance has been as that middle order player. I don't know the answer to who they would go with. I mean, maybe
Harris would have been happy not to be opening in Hobart.
Correct. Correct.
Might have dinted his test average a bit opening up down there. So that might have maybe been his papers in disguise.
His papers might have been stamped if he'd
Harris,
played in over.
He might have made a good 50 like he did at the MCG when no one else could bat at the top of the order.
Yeah. If you had the choice, maybe, though, you would have tempted to just say, oh, we'll sit this one out. I've got a sore hamstring.
We'll take a quick break. This is RSN Central. This is the Thursday Forum. Gareth Hall, Mark Warren, Adam White with you. When we come back, we'll ask Junior what he would do if he was the coach of the England cricket side. We'll also get his... Well, I've got to get the tip of the day. SMSs are flowing in. What's Junior's best this week? He's become bigger than Dean Lester on the tip here on this station. And we'll also get his thoughts on the Big Bash as we head into the finals. 0416 90 50 52 to join our conversation. Gareth Hall, Mark Waugh and Adam White with you for the Thursday Forum here on RSN Central. Junior, what would you do with England? How do they come back from here?
Oh, jeez. Give me a 10 foolscap piece of paper to fill in that question. Look, where do you start? I mean... You know, they just got it wrong from the get-go, didn't they? I thought tactically and team selections were poor, so that's got to fall with the captain and the coach. I thought they didn't focus on the test match in front of them. There's too much looking ahead, you know, and probably it just looks a bit... They might need some tough love, that England team. I think they need a new coach. I think that's the first thing. I think Chris Silver, I don't know him, but... He's a selector as well, so everything sort of falls on his shoulders, which, you know, seems a lot for one person. So, I mean, there's just been so many mistakes for this tour. So I would imagine they'll go with a new coach. And I think they need some tough love, someone that's going to really, it's okay to put your hand around players' shoulders and give them a pat in the back, but at some stage, you know, they've got to be accountable, those English players. And they showed a lack of fight in that last test match. I thought the last hour was terrible, the way they batted. I mean, at least... Like Scott Boland, he's a number 11, but he got behind the ball. You know, the last three English batsmen never got within, you know, on the same pitch as the stump. So, you know, I think they need new leadership. I personally would look to a new captain, but I just don't know if there's any other candidates. If Ben Stokes wanted to do it, I'd give it to him, because I think he's got, you know, he's a leader on the field. He's quite an aggressive player. I think Joe Root, as good a player he is and as good a bloke as he is, I think he's just a bit too conservative as a leader. So that's what I'd do. I'd start at the top and then work my way down. But, I mean, overall, their batting wasn't up to test standard, was it? And they haven't got a spinner of test standard, so they need some new personnel. But I'm not sure if there's anyone any better sort of lurking around the corner.
I'd make Joey Root and James Anderson the vice captain, the captain, after they were at least having a beer at 6:30 in the morning, Junior.
That's the most. that's good. Yeah, I agree.
It's great leadership.
having done that England Lions game before Christmas, there's not much there. I mean, Josh Bohannon as a middle order player looked okay. They chose not to play that Matt Parkinson as a leg spinner, but really, there's not much in that lower. You know what I would do.
I
know it has been spoken about a little bit, but if I was the ECB, I would be doing whatever I could to get Justin Langer as coach. While Cricket Australia continue to hesitate on whether he is or he isn't the right person for them, Justin Langer is exactly what England needs for all the reasons that Mark just mentioned around discipline, intensity, hard work. That's what England needs. So I'd be doing exactly that. Put the pressure on Cricket Australia by saying, well, if you don't want him, we'll have him.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think that's a fair call, and I'm still amazed at the talk about Justin Langer. I mean, the vibes out there don't seem very good that Justin Langer's contract will be renewed. It just seems a lot of negative talk. So normally where there's smoke, there's fire. So you're right. If I was the ECB, I would latch on to Justin Langer because he's a guy that's, he's a guy that he's going to present some tough love. You know, he's going to tell some truths, but at the same time, he's going to support players if they need it. So, yeah, interesting times because, I mean, you really want England to be a strong test match nation. At the moment, they're poor. You know, their batting and their spin bowling cupboards are so bare. You know, a couple of good things out of the tour, I think, for England. I thought Zach Crawley showed good signs. Mark Wood was obviously very good with the ball at times as well. Joe Root batted okay. Stokes looked well short of a gallop, didn't it? And then he just got a bit frustrated towards the end of the tour. But, I mean, if he can find his best form, he'll be the backbone of that England team. But, that's about it, I reckon.
I always look back when you take on opposition teams, how many players in that England side would get picked in the Australian side? And probably Joe Root's the only one.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yep. Mark Wood maybe be your backup play, probably make your touring squad, but I can't think. I think Cameron Green went past Stokes during the Ashes.
There's two arguments to that because it's if they were all standing up against a wall, would you pick Green or would you pick Stokes? And then the other way
right looking now at I'd it pick
is,
Green.
The other way of looking at it is based on the performance of that particular series. So on the series you'd go with Green, but if I could choose Green or Stokes for the next tour? Oh, that's a tougher call.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think Cameron Green, he's going to be a player, isn't he? I mean, his bowling was exceptional. I mean, his bowling is nearly as good as the front-line bowlers. When he came on as a fourth-change bowler, it just makes such a huge difference. There's no easy sort of periods with the bat for England. So, I mean, give credit to the Australian bowlers. They didn't. They just bowled super all the way through, and Cameron Green gives that quality and depth to the fast bowling. I thought his batting obviously got better as the series goes on. If he can just learn to relax a bit and trust himself, I think he's going to be a very special all-rounder for Australia.
When was the last time you saw a bowler picked in the side to bowl, and they would have bowled for, 60 or 70 overs, the Australian cricket side, and he never got a bowl in Nathan Lyon? I found that. I've never seen that before. I've seen, spinners not get a bowl after they knock a side over for 90 or 100, but not when they make close to 200.
Yeah, it's unusual. I can't remember it, or Nathan Lyon ever not getting a bowl in a test match. And that's where, I guess, Pat Cummins' captaincy was pretty good. I don't think he needed to bowl him. I thought Pat did make some mistakes as a captain, and he'll learn from them during the series. He batted way too long in Sydney, cost us winning a test match there. I've got no doubt about that. And some of his field settings were extremely negative in that test match, but it didn't matter. But that was a good call, not bowling Nathan Lyon. As harsh as it seems, if you were batting in Hobart, who would you rather face, a spin bowler or a quick bowler in those conditions? And my answer would be, I'd rather face a spinner. So I thought he got that exactly right, even though it was unusual.
So Justin Langer, do you think you'll be reappointed as Australian coach? It's unbelievable when you have a look at his record over the last 3 to 4 months, at winning a World Cup at T20 in the T20 World Cup and then winning the Ashes 4-0. It's like people talking about James McDonald getting sacked off Nature Strip.
Well, there's two conversations around Justin Langer, and there's two trains of thought. One is that after the crisis of the Australian winter, he changed and he listened and he was a better coach and Australia played better. So that's one way. And so as a result of that, he needs a new contract. Mm-hmm. And the other train of thought is he took a back seat and allowed the assistant coaches to do their job. And as a result of that, they played better. So there's two trains of thought. Now, I don't know what necessarily know what the answer is or what actually happened behind the scenes, but the fact that he hasn't been reappointed based on what has happened, you'd have to be nervous.
Surely you know something, Junior, when you're having a chat to the boys in the lift.
I don't know anything. I'm surprised. I mean, coaching's all about performance, isn't it? No matter what sport. And, you know, he's delivered in spades the last 4 or 5 months, winning the World Cup, and now beating England 4-0. Should have been 5-0, but we'll take 4-0. So you can't do much more than that.
Did you back Australia 5-0, didn't you, Junior?
No, I just think we wasted a test. Yeah. We wasted a test match in Sydney that we should have won.
No doubt.
A test match to test match. But, look, I think they should split the roles, definitely, moving ahead. Whoever is given the coaching jobs in Australia, there's a bit of mail around that Trevor Bayliss is maybe one name that's been floated around and is you know, a strong candidate for maybe the red ball. But I think it's a bit too much for one coach to handle everything. So that's definitely, you know, I think will happen. But I'm surprised that Justin Langer has not had his contract renewed if he wants to do it, and I'm pretty sure he does. So, yeah, let's see what happens.
Who's the Sydney Sixers coach?
The Sixers coach is Greg Shepherd.
Yeah, I'd appoint Greg Shepherd.
If I was a betting man, I would say that Trevor Bayliss will coach the test team and Andrew McDonald will coach the white ball cricket.
Okay. Mm.
That would be if I was a betting man.
And JL's
out. I agree with that. Yep.
So that's an exclusive RSN Central Thursday Forum, Adam White. We'll make headlines out of you yet, White.
No, I'm just saying if I was a betting man, that would be what I would do. And I'll tell you what, I had a bit of luck on the punt yesterday. I had Sydney Thunder over 169.5 runs, and Nathan McAndrew hit a 4 off the last ball to get it to 170, which was a very good result. And I'd also backed the Thunder in a multi, and I thought I was out, and Cameron Boyce hit that last ball straight to Sanger. It was just a wonderful result.
you did get lucky twice.
It's unbelievable.
Hey, Junior, with the Big Bash, all right, like it's going to be entertaining now because the finals, finally the finals have arrived. But is it sometimes like when you go to commentate these matches, it's like going out to Newcastle to watch the Benchmark 58s go around?
Oh, please, don't denigrate the Benchmark 58 at Newcastle. You just got to make sure you get the right team out when you're commentating because you forget which team's which. And there's been a lot of new players that have come into the frame this season, but now we're down to the pointy end. We can look forward to the finals. I think the Scorchers are the team to beat because they've got Marsh, Inglis, Munro back in their side.
Does Richardson come back?
Richardson, I'd say so. I actually think the strikers are the value at $13 because they're going to get Alex Carey and Travis Head back into their side. So I actually think they're a bit of a sneaky chance. Whitey, what do you reckon?
Yeah, the batting is really good. I still worry a little bit about their bowling because they've relied so much on Rashid Khan. But actually, Fawad Ahmed has actually bowled very well since Rashid's gone because it's almost like he's bowling where Rashid would have bowled as opposed to just trying to fit around Rashid. But Warrell lost form, Agar's out of the team now. Like, they're not, I don't know whether they bowl quite well enough. And I think that's where we all get sort of swept up in what Mitchell Marsh has been doing with the bat and maybe Ashton Turner for the Scorchers. But it's just their defence, their bowling and their fielding that gets it done.
A bit of value.
No, I agree with you. They're certainly not the worst.
So how does the final system work? So you got the Strikers, $1.75, taking on the Hurricanes Friday at the MCG. So the loser is out. The winner goes and plays the Thunder. Yeah.
See, I reckon the Strikers could beat both the Hurricanes and the Thunder.
Yeah.
And the winner of the Scorchers and the Sixers get the home grand final.
Straight to the grand final, yep.
And the Scorchers' home ground is Docklands, so which they play well at
because
they've got the guys that can clear the boundary.
Why wouldn't they have it at the MCG, the final, then?
Because they've chosen that venue because they think they play better there.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
I don't know about that. I think they play good everywhere. But, I think the Scorchers are deserved favourites. What are they, about 5-4, 6-4? The Sixers have been a bit hot and cold this season. I'm not sure about them.
They miss Vince a bit, maybe?
Well, they're equal.
Yeah.
225, the Scorchers. The Sixers, 275. Thunder, $6. Strikers, $15. And Hobart Hurricanes are $15.
The Hurricanes don't bowl well enough.
I'm with Scotty Bowler now.
I'm with... he's a test bowler. I'm going Mark War's tip of scorches as your banker and some dollars on the strikers.
Hey, Junior, Scotty Boland, Whitey interviewed him today and he never really mentioned him. He mentioned a few others and didn't really single him out after Whitey tweeted that he should be playing in that MCG test, and he had about 5,000 retweets. But since that interview, he's basically cancelled him out of the Pakistan series, and now he's bagging him as not a test. He's only a test bowler and not a T20 bowler.
Yeah, we're the supporter, isn't he?
Yeah, he jumped off.
Scott Boland is a red ball player.
Okay, so not a white ball. But yeah. Imagine the confidence that he's gained.
Yeah. Yep. I'm very comfortable with the fact he's a red ball player.
Now, Junior, we're all over the strikers. We've got White Boots going around on Saturday. Tyler Schiller takes the ride. And then Holy Rain and Trajection represent yours. Oh, God bless Trajection. Nashua rides that galloper in the 10th race. What are we thinking here, Junior?
Look, I'm thinking White Boots. Look, he hasn't won for a while, the old boy. But, geez, I reckon this is a good race for him. $10. I reckon he's a good each way bet. His run was really good at Warwick Farm last Wednesday, where he ran on strongly for fourth. He's sort of back into a midway grade. I'll tell you this, he'll run in the first four. I just hope he doesn't run fourth, because he's run 1,000 fourths in his career, White Boots. So I just want him to improve a bit. So, no, he's a good each way chance, definitely. Mm-hmm. And in the race 10, Trajection and Holy Rain, nothing between those two. The problem is they both get back and they've drawn a bit awkward. So if sort of the track pattern's running on out wide by race 10, then they've both got a solid each-way chance. So that's that. Sunday at Wyong, we've got a horse called Turning in race 5.
Nathan Lyon wouldn't be on that anyway. Oh, that's a bit harsh. I said Nathan Lyon wouldn't be on that horse anyway. He doesn't turn.
Did you see one of the wickets he took yesterday?
Where?
Up at the Gabba.
I mean, Jack Leach, I should have said. Sorry, Junior.
Turning, resuming from a spell at Wyong Race 5, drawn barrier 8 of 8. I think we'll get a better draw being a home track, but he's quite a smart 3-year-old, so he should run well first up. So that's it.
Beautiful. So who are we backing?
Jeez, you put the pressure on Fair Dinkum.
Yeah, well, everybody's... I've just given you the
rundown. You can work it out from there, can't you?
So White Boots each way. And Turning each way.
Well, the other two, if they're running on from the back, will run good races, Trajection and Holy Rain.
Do you know, I was at the sales there last week, and one of your big owners, I said, I was talking to Junior on the radio, and I nearly went and bought a horse for $150,000, Kim. And he goes, you should have done it. We would have been able to syndicate it. So I've been given the green light, and we can get our listeners involved as well on RSN Central. Probably the Melbourne sales at the end of February, Junior. I'll go to work for you.
Righto, make yourself useful.
I will. just a couple of SMSs. I've got to get through these because the people love having a chat to you, Junior. David Warner's got a terrible record, Pat says, outside of Australia. Is he under any pressure?
Look, he's not getting any younger, put it that way. He's certain conditions... I think the pace and bounce can sometimes worry him with certain bowls, but Pakistan, not a lot of bounce in the tracks over there, so you know, I expect him to do well over there. But like anybody, you know, you've got to perform, and once you get a bit older, the focus sort of comes on you. So I'm not putting a big question mark on him, but, you know, he probably needs to make some runs in Pakistan.
Brenton asks, what does Australia learn from when touring next year for the Ashes? What's the best preparation? 1 month over before the first test and two trial games, Australia v Australia A, to determine the first starting 11? That's a good question, because England were woeful in their preparation, but they were probably a little bit hamstrung in a way.
Is that for you, Whitey? You can answer that.
Yes, Whitey.
Well, the problem is, I thought it might have been Max, because he would, you know, playing all that cricket over in England. I mean, it's like what we see every time someone comes here. They go, oh, they get better the longer the test series goes as they get used to the conditions. Ideally, you'd want 5 or 6 weeks of preparing, but the international schedule doesn't allow it. Mm. Yeah. So that's the problem, is that sometimes you might get one game in before you're straight into the test match.
How many weeks did you used to get, Junior?
We used to have about... We were there early. We used to play 16 or 17 county games, but not before the first test. We'd probably play 2 or 3, I reckon, at least. But, I mean, the preparation this summer was the same for both teams. I mean, Australia had a pretty ordinary preparation as well. So sometimes preparation can be overrated and over-concentrated on. But, I mean, with so many tournaments around the country. I think teams and coaches are pretty used to a limited preparation now. So I'd imagine, I think the last tour to England, with Australia A played Australia, didn't they? Had their own little camp, I think. So probably something similar, I guess. The counties probably won't help us out, so it might be up to us to manufacture our own little, pre-tour camp.
I remember being over for the Ashes in 97 and 2001, unfortunately not playing, but just watching or working, and the first game was always at Arundel Castle. I remember Simon Cadditch made about 180 one day against, I don't know who, but he wasn't even in the team and he played.
That was always the first port of call, Arundel Castle against an England sort of 11. Makeup 11, so great spot to start off to down there near Goodwood and down that country. Yeah, so it was that was traditionally, and then I think there was always a couple of tour matches as well before the first test.
Trevor Bayliss left England's test side in a disaster.
But I think that's the whole thing, is what England had been focusing on. England had focused on their World Cup, at their home World Cup, to try and win it, and they did. But that has, and clearly they have neglected their Red Bull cricket as a result of that, but they did get the result they're after.
Always a pleasure, Junior. Hey, I've got one for you at Gloucester Park tomorrow night, Junior.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, I know you love your I'll Gloucester write it Park down. Trats. Race 6, number 1, Minstrel. $2.50. Money for Jam. Tip it to Kim as well. Hey?
Money for Jam, is it?
Yeah, Money for Jam. Race 6, number 1.
Famous last words.
Can I do a tip?
Yeah.
In the Gulf?
Yes.
In Abu Dhabi?
Yeah.
Starts today.
Why not?
Tyrrell Hatton is $21 at the tab.
All right, then.
So you get about $5 top five as well, or $4.50 top five. He's the defending champion. He won last year by 4 shots. He plays well in the desert. Tyrrell Hatton.
Beautiful. Hey, Junior, can you do us a favour as well? I've got some mates that get the mail from Ricky Ponting and his greyhound tips. Any chance you could pass them on? They're pretty good, they tell me. Especially around Devonport on a Tuesday.
Yeah, no, he's normally got a few floating around down there, yeah.
All right, mate, thanks as always. We'll catch up with you next week.
See you guys.
There's Mark Waugh. Thank you, Whitey.